All right, folks, we're going to start. Thank you very much for joining us, and appreciate your patience as we're trying to implement this new scanning process for every session. My name is Daniel Wong. I'm with Veritone. And just want to give you a little background before we start this session called Understanding AI and Why Should You Care? Veritone is the one of the largest providers of artificial intelligence in the M&E space. We record and ingest over 7 million hours of media content and enable M&E organizations like you guys to index, enrich, make searchable live and archive media. Everything from spoken words to faces to objects, logos, credits, and more. With powerful orchestration to provide the best results for the most desirable output. We do this through a combination of hundreds of cognitive engines, which are currently being used by our clients to conduct over 1.1 million searches per hour today. So today's panel, I want to introduce to you two of our subject matter experts from Veritone. Peter Nguyen, who sits in the far right. He's our Vice President of Product and AI Development. Peter brings over 21 years of experience in product and product management to Veritone, leveraging strong proficiencies in technology and architecture. A product visionary and a community organizer, Peter has held management roles at leading tech companies including IBM, HP, Oracle, Microsoft, and most recently Google. Peter has revolutionized the entire lifecycle in transforming visions into scalable platforms used by billions. And just a little tidbit, I don't know why he didn't put this in his bio, but Peter led also the autonomous driving project at Google when he was there, so we're happy to have him in our organization. Alan Kim is our head of ecosystem. He's responsible for also our Veritone developer application. And Veritone Developer allows developers to build artificial intelligence powered engines, applications, and data products for the enterprise and government markets, as well as M&E. Prior to joining Veritone, Alan built data science tools and teams to solve problems in the higher education, finance, and defense industries. Alan studied at Carnegie Mellon and built robots with his kids on his spare time. Thank you for joining. I want to make this session very interactive. My goal is not to have these guys geek you out, because they will. And so if you guys have questions during any of our questions, please do, because I want you guys to learn. In our last session, I think Jeanette, who was at Fall Springs in the other event we had, she demonstrated our AI platform, and it was a standing room only. People saw how AI was in action. We can show that too if you didn't get a chance to see. We're in the ballroom next to it, where all the vendors at. We're also demonstrating how AI is in play with our application. So feel free to come by and see that if you want to. But before we start this panel, just to get to know you guys in the audience, just by show of hands, how many of you guys out there are right now using AI as integrated into your workflows? Anybody out there, show of hands?
Nobody.
One? How many of you guys are interested in AI, at least? Going in? Great. And that's very interesting that the hands are like, because we've seen AI, we just recently came back from the NAB show, and there's no doubt AI is no longer a buzzword. It is really becoming a reality, and we're seeing a lot of people like you guys at NAB. They were trying to figure out what are we going to do with our, you know, how are we going to implement AI into our workflows and things like that. So that's good to know. And then another thing, just so we understand what parts of the organization you guys are all at, how many of you guys are in the pre or post-production side of things? Great. How about finance? Okay, sales and marketing? Okay, good. This allows us to then understand how we're gonna talk about use cases if we need to on some of the stuff. So without further ado, let's talk about AI. And so, Peter and Alan, so you know, AI, as you know, it's a lot of AI is all about algorithms and so forth. And we hear there's a lot of stigmatism around AI tied to Terminator and Skynet and all this other stuff. And in reality, AI, we break down AI into three different types of general intelligence. Narrow, general, and super intelligence. And so maybe, Alan, can you tell us the difference between that and where we are in terms of today in the marketplace between narrow, general, and super intelligence?
Sure. So, you know, we talk to a ton of companies every day, and as part of the ecosystem team, our job is to reach out to startups, large corporations, and partner with them to get their cognitive engines onto our platform. So when we look at the landscape of what's available out there today, you know, it's very much artificial narrow intelligence. And where we as an industry are getting to is that general intelligence. So to define what artificial narrow intelligence is, it's really taking machine learning algorithms and solving a very niche specific problem. So you can take something like transcription, where it's taking audio, transcribing that, and turning that into written text. You can take that text, take that and run it through a sentiment analysis. That would be another narrow intelligence algorithm. So the way that we're approaching it to solve and approximate what we call artificial general intelligence, and that's defined as intelligence that's multi-class and actually better than human across all the categories. We have a concept called chain cognition, where we can take some of these artificial narrow intelligence algorithms and stitch them together. So now you can start really getting to a close approximation to what a human experience is. So right now I'm talking to you, you guys are looking at me, you're processing the words, and there's concepts forming in your heads. Those are all series of algorithms that's happening in our head. But again, the human experience around that is that we're combining that all together to get that real interaction there.
Peter, I'll let you define superintelligence, general superintelligence.
Thank you, Alan. So, at Google, we push the envelope, obviously, to get to general intelligence. And in some areas, we use a combination of narrow engines, as Alan alluded to, to combine those cognitive functions, just like we combine, those same cognitive functions in our brain. So when we hear the lion roar, right, all parts of your brain fire, so you can get the fight or flight reaction, right? So all cognitive functions in your brain kind of light up. So general intelligence means, how do you use all your cognitive abilities as a human so you can make the best decision in real time, right? And at the human level, precision. And performance. Now, super intelligence, which is a little scary at this point to contemplate, is something even more superior than that, right? Something that can actually predict better than human beings can. And in some narrow intelligence applications, like you see with how AlphaGo is able to beat the very best champions at Go, and is able to do that in a very narrow way. But that same application, right, could now be applied for medical, for M&E, for things that we get to toy with every day in that very time, right? It'd be fascinating if you actually look at our demo. The same cognitive abilities in a chain cognition is how we're able to really create this operating system for AI. And it ties all those cognitive functions together to create this more chain, more cohesive, more impactful, more insightful platform for you. It's hard for me to explain it, except actually in words, but when these guys actually demo it, I think it will come to life.
So Peter, when you talk about superintelligence, this is Elon Musk scaring the world and his thing. That's what you're calling superintelligence, correct?
Yes, and I think responsibly, even Elon and our CEO, we're saying, I think the day will come when that can happen. But let's build ethics around that, right? Let's have some frameworks in which we can allow for the superintelligence to still be for good under human supervision or human ethical reasoning.
Right. So superintelligence is way, way far out. General, we're approaching. How far do you think we're close to even getting close to general intelligence?
Again, at Google, we had some, what we call, when we tested some of these algorithms, we saw some surprises, where the general intelligence algorithm actually surprises with the results. It actually planned, it actually reasoned, it actually collaborated, and those were sort of natural things that the algorithms were able to do, because we had architected it that way. So it was learning on its own. Do you see some of that with reinforcement learning, with genetic programming algorithms? I can go on, but when you combine these algorithms together, it formulates an ensemble of algorithms that do very surprising things.
Right, and those combinations are a combination of a bunch of narrow intelligence engine equaling to get to that general intelligence.
Yes, it's an ensemble approach. So you may have heard Netflix a few years ago, they had a $1 million prize for those who could come up with the best algorithm or recommendation. So it was the ensemble approach that actually won that prize, right? But now we're taking that to a super hyper level where you're now able to combine even more powerful algorithms to really crack open the code for general intelligence. And again, looking at Google, being part of the DeepMind team, at some point we're researching that, and we're very surprised at some of the results we're getting. And AlphaGo was a surprise for us, actually, when we made predictions that we wouldn't be able to beat the champion in that for the next 20 years. But we were able to surprise ourselves in beating the champion in just 2 or 3 years. Right? So it's very surprising.
Yeah.
Cool. This question, yes?
Yes, I have a question. It seems in your taxonomy, according to me, you are going on the quality in order to increasing quality to solve a problem, compared to that. But is there not another dimension, which is the breadth, the width of the number of tasks which is possible? Today, AlphaGo is only able to play Go. If you try to do something else, it's different. And is there another dimension of, in our brain, we are doing infinity of tasks?
Yes.
And so, is there not such a dimension, which is the number of tasks?
Yes.
On diversity of these tasks?
Yes. And still, it's what's called an NP-hard problem, because without really the computing power at the quantum level, which means you do parallel computing, and you're able to correlate all of those insights back, which is what quantum computing is promising us to do someday, the hardware becomes still the bottleneck for some of these algorithms to try and really crack, and therefore to infer all that information back into a cognitive general intelligence there.
Okay, cool. Let's talk about the AI marketplace today. So can you tell me a little bit, Alan, what you're seeing today in the AI marketplace? Because obviously a lot of these organizations are being approached by bunch of vendors with different types of, hey, I got this cool AI engine and this AI engine. Tell me what we're seeing in the marketplace today.
Sure. It's exploding like crazy. And it's akin to a Cambrian explosion where we're just seeing just the number of startups that are popping up every day. It's harder to keep track of, frankly. And that's one of our jobs here on the ecosystem team, is to be able to track all the new entrants coming to the marketplace. In the last 5 years, there's been roughly close to about $40 billion, most of which is in the last several years. And it's at the rate of close to about $200 million every week going into the startup ecosystem, just to focus in on that. That doesn't include companies like Google and Microsoft that we work closely with, their budgets, and they're investing billions of dollars into that. I think DeepMind was a multi-billion dollar acquisition in itself. So that's really fueling this explosion in AI and the capabilities around there. And it started to solve some interesting problems. So the first wave is really solving basic, most primitive problem, if you will, right? So it's solving a very specific use case. And we're still probably in that phase today. We're starting to hear companies that are being able to do a little bit more sophistication as they're stitching multiple models together and really into the self-learning, the deep learning, side of things. They aren't that many today. Google obviously is the leader in that space today, and they have a couple year head start, but we're seeing with the open source library market really opening up, the academic contribution to that space really growing, and that's, again, the other side of the fuel that's really pouring in from a knowledge base. The limiting factor today is around talent, right? There's an article I came across that there's probably 22,000 people in the world that can truly consider themselves a data scientist. It's a very small number. So what we're seeing is, because of the limited talent in that space, tools starting to proliferate to help that whole life chain of how do you actually collect the data, build models, validate those models, deploy those models, and the tool space is starting to explode out. So I'm sure you guys are all hearing from these vendors, can solve all these problems with you. And it's starting to get to that enterprise application. I think 2018, 2019, we're gonna really start seeing some real concrete companies that are being built out of that. And we're seeing that as well.
So right now, in terms of number of engines out there in the marketplace, is it tens of thousands right now? And where is that going? Because at some point it becomes unmanageable. And how do you then manage all these AI engines? Because one day I may be using engine A, and then two boys from Stanford says, I got a better engine and I got to focus here. So how is that working? And what do you recommend as best practices to manage all these engines? And what are we seeing today in the marketplace?
Sure. So we track today in the tens of thousands of companies in our database that we have that we're compiling. And you're right. If any given day, there's a better algorithm that's going to be coming back. You know, if you look at how the tech giants are operating and making their investment, Google may have a really great object recognition engine one quarter. Recently at AWS, Amazon came out with Amazon Recognition that bumped the bar up, and they became the better leader in the marketplace. So every quarter, we're seeing this incremental lift going out, but again, fuel behind that are billions of dollars of investment. So one thing to think about as you're developing applications to solve your problem, how do you future-proof your investment into AI? And you know, the frameworks that exist out there today, you know, we certainly have one and we're building out, but it's an arms race. And you know, how do you get the best of breed combination onto your platform without having to tear everything down, rebuild it again? That gets expensive. So we're in the early days from a technology market, and typically what happens is you see this proliferation happen. There's a thousand flowers blooming into the field, but over time, as with many industries, there's a consolidation period. We're not there yet, but probably within a 5-10 year time frame, you're going to start seeing some of these startups dry up from a funding perspective. They're starting to die out, and then they become acquired as a part of a larger ecosystem.
Yeah, just a quick question. When you were talking about the bottlenecks of growing, I was very interested in that because M&E compared to, you know, driverless cars and a whole lot of other use cases is, you know, it's a much smaller niche segment. And so therefore, the expense of training the system and going through the process of developing a good AI engine that actually can solve some of those use cases has been very expensive. Do you see the advancement of all of, when you talk about tools, are you seeing the advancement of the process of simplification to even solve out these use cases for marketing allocation, greenlighting decisions, those kinds of things work out?
That's a fantastic question. Let me take a first crack at that. We deal with that every day, actually. We have customers coming in, and it's their first foray into AI. They're nervous about it. How do we make this work? We don't want to fail, right? So the beauty of Veritone is the ability for us to not just have one engine that work for you, where you have a single point of failure, that you can spread out your investment with multiple engines now, where performance becomes really almost insured for you because we're able to collaborate multiple engines even within one class, right? So let's just say if you're looking at a transcription engine and it's failing in a particular set of audio conditions, because not all engines perform the same when you test it with noise and distortion and things of that sort. That's where the engines start to break down. So how do you collaborate the engines that do well in that scenario with your existing investment so that now you have engines standing on top of each other's shoulders to still give you the performance that you need, right? And that's what we deal with when we handle the customers through every day is in tough conditions, in conditions where, you know, data becomes important, noisy data becomes important, how do you contend with that? And so when you collaborate engines, you're able to get, you know, much increased performance.
So I think what Peter's talking about there is orchestration. And that's something that I was trying to get the team to get to. Maybe you can talk about orchestration and how, because again, we have so many thousands of engines and there's point solutions. You know, obviously Veritone's developed a orchestration layer, if you can talk a little bit about, and how that actually works to your advantage in solving that problem.
Yeah, so part of orchestration, like an OS, is how do you benchmark engines? How do you know when engine one failed and engine five works? Right. How do you load balance your engine so that you can get the most out of your 10, 15, 30, 100 different engines that are operating on your AI platform every day? So how do you choose the right engine at the right time to still maintain the level of performance even when it's really tough, noisy data? Right. So, you know, that's what I do every day, right? To be able to say, how do we auto-benchmark these engines so we know exactly which engine performed at the best time, at certain noise condition, that we can deploy that engine economically, right? So that we're not, you know, using all your engines and having to pay for those engines, but to use it economically so that we can get still the best ROI from our engines.
We have a question over here first, and then I'll give it to you.
Can I go ahead and stand up? I'll give you the mic.
So I hear you say audio, like Alexa Echo or Alexa whatever, and you know, why would we want to use, like, go through you when we can just do it in-house? And, you know, it doesn't make any sense, you know, why we want to do that. And, you know, we could use TensorFlow or, you know, Azure projects and, you know, do it ourselves. Like, why would we want to go through a service like you when we have our own developers and we can hire someone?
Yeah, so I can take a first crack at that. Peter, you can fill in the gaps there. So, great question. That's a question that we hear all the time as well. And you know, we encourage folks to do that, right? So if there's a specific use case that you're looking for, it's going to be easier for you to go directly to Amazon to build something on that front. Where we come into play is really how do you stitch some of these engines together to get multiple engines coordinating together, right? And one use case that we have with one of our clients, they're a beverage company, and they have great footage of all these action sports. And one thing that they are looking to do, they have petabytes of archive footage, but how do you make meaningful content extracted out of that, right? There's a lot of rich data in there. They've made a lot of investment in there. There's ways to monetize that in today's environment as well. The way to extract that, you run that through a, you know, transcription engine first, you know, for you to go and get access to the best transcription engine, you could do that on your own. There's benefits with going with us because we get a volume play on that. We can offer the discounts to you on that front as well. Additionally, you know, once that process happens, we can run that through an OCR engine or an object recognition or a face recognition engine, face detection engine, right? There's all these different cognitive engines that we have on our platform that we can pull together and stitch through. And that's the beauty of the platform, is that you can take advantage of 16 different classes of cognition that have on our platform, and with one easy means, just be able to get access to that.
So, let me answer that question as well, because that's a very meaningful question. If you've ever ran Google transcription engine through very noisy police video or audio and benchmark that, you will get a realistic benchmark of how poorly Google performs, or even Alexa performs, right? So there are certain engines that, depending on the data, it's trained to listen to, you know, police officers running after criminals, right? That's a real life scenario. Very noisy, right? You know, far field audio engines. And that's the real life AI that you have to be successful with. And so when you're looking at an investment like this, you're saying, how do I make sure that under any condition I can still succeed? Right? Noisy or otherwise, challenging, I can still succeed. Not just in the transcription, but in other cognitive classes that are just wrong. Right? So when you benchmark, and we consistently do that. We let us are doing benchmarking so that we can get you the best performance.
Yeah. We have a couple more minutes left. We're gonna answer this question, then we'll have to wrap up.
Yeah, real quick, as consumers, how do we benchmark the right AI orchestration company to choose? Because there's various ones out there. Like, what should we look at? Is it, if you guys list, like, various engines that are out there, or other maybe some kind of statistics around as far as which company has the best performing engines, or the deals with people? I'm not sure, because we're actually talking with other ones too, so I'm curious.
Yeah, we are very much doing that, and that's one of the services that we provide, right, from a benchmarking perspective. We have our own interest to make sure that we get the best cognitive engines onto our platform, and the only way to do that is to benchmark it. You know, it's a relatively new field, so benchmarking even that across all these different capabilities as well, it's a challenge in itself, but that's where some of our technologies at Conductor come into play. we can take the benchmarks that we're establishing and be able to extract more performance out of that. So a lot of effort goes into that. I think from a, you know, as you're looking at the marketplace, it's a growing landscape, and I know we've all been conditioned to think that Google, no offense to Google, but we had an engine company come on site yesterday that actually beats out Google in certain categories pretty handily. But those are startups that we're looking to expose to the broader community, right? They're a small startup, 8 people, all PhDs from Carnegie Mellon, really strong technology team. We were really impressed by them, but consistently, well over the top of Google.
And also, one thing to consider is how trainable is your existing engine. And that's very important because can you actually train Google on different audio conditions? Can you actually train Alexa on different audio conditions? Because what goes into making these engines so good is the data. The actual data that you're going to be running your AI engine on. So how do you make these engines continually be good based on the data that you're using, right? And that's how we define the goodness of the engines is, number one, how well do they stand up in my use case, as noisy as it may be. And number two is how trainable is it, so that it can also stand up to the changing environment that I'm going to deal with, right? So we have a way to do that. Always to make your investment worth something more because we look through data, we train on more data, and we continue to get the engines be better. That's how I think we're
going to
compete against Google.
Great. And our last question for the session.
I'm overwhelmed by the fact that thousands of engines. Would you categorize them into a few buckets and align them with business functions?
Yes. We've had several rounds of classifying the market, and as new entrants come into play, we have a framework in place where we're analyzing the market, getting a sense of the landscape. Today we've identified 60 categories of cognitions that represent. We start with 7 classes, and typically they're around the inputs themselves, and then from there we break it down into categories and capabilities. So we have this framework in place. Every week we're evaluating, because we'll talk to a new company and say, does this fit into our rubric today? If not, then you know that continues to grow. We have a pretty good model in place that's holding up pretty well today, so we haven't had to make too many adjustments, but yes, I mean, if this is, you know, we're kind of like a biologist, a zoologist going out to the wild and saying, okay, who's out there, and how do we classify things?
All right, we're out of time, unfortunately. Thank you very much. Peter and Alan will be here. We're on the general session over there. Thank you very much for coming.